Go Loud.
Heave in a while, actually.
Okay.
I feel like for a heave, you need a critical mass of people. It was more of a nudge.
There's
in
like
the Labour Party.
Yeah.
Jim Gavin is not even a member of Fianna Fáil.
And he ran a team of blue shirts for years and years. Expert in this in the podcast sense, which means not an expert at all.
A white man talking into a mic.
Absolutely, yeah. I was born to do it.
Hello, everybody, from a pretty low energy, a few scoops this week.
We're at NPR levels of just talking like that.
Chilled out. Yeah. I am Aoife Muir, an author and journalist, and my co-host is Colm O'Regan.
Yes, and we're both just after our live episode at Electric Picnic, so it's good to not have so many people around, although it's roughly the same amount of people.
So we played Electric Picnic this weekend, and we were scheduled at the exact same time as Kneecap. You might have seen some pictures of the Kneecap performance over the weekend. 80,000 people went to see Kneecap, and the remaining 20 people came to see A Few Scoops. So we actually did have a lovely time.
It was great, yeah.
We had a lovely audience, mostly of friends and family who came to see us. But we were delighted to be there. I am still slightly hungover. I did the full 3 nights in a tent, which I'm never doing again. I did see some public fornication while I was there. I stayed in the Silver campsite and I saw people making love in public next to the pathway, which I thought maybe I wouldn't see in Silver campsite, but it's good to see that, you know, people are just YOLOing their time at Electric Picnic.
The way you described it suggested that it probably wasn't love yet.
It didn't look like lovemaking that you see in the films. It was a lot more the way people lose their virginity in the films.
Yeah. Rotting, I think you described it as.
Yeah, I had a great time. I love Electric Picnic. Saw some great bands. My surprise best band that I saw was me and Siobhan went to see Kingfisher.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not actually that big of a Kingfisher fan, but me and Siobhan both cried, not because we were so drunk, but also they seemed so delighted and so grateful to be there. And it was just a lovely moment.
Mm.
And I also cried so much at David Gray that Siobhan had to dig out a tissue from somewhere in her coat.
And we brought that energy to our live podcast recording then. It was just a tear fest. No, it was lovely. It was great. And there was some people there who weren't friends and family as well too. I think there was more than 20. I think we...
Towards the end, I'd say 50 or 60.
We were the best attended tent in the Leviathan area, which was hard to find in Mindfield. It's behind Cree. So I think we can say, well done, our second live podcast recording. And a huge tour coming up, getting the t-shirts printed as we speak. But we should do some news as well.
This week, we have the news that the central bank will no longer approve Israeli government bonds. Fianna Fáil have finally picked a candidate for the Irish presidency in ex-Dublin GAA manager Jim Gavin. We are starting to get nervous about seeing tricolours everywhere, and so are Dublin City Council. The Gardaí are investigating extremely grave threats made against Simon Harris. And good news for Fionnuala's everywhere, they're getting a storm named after them. We have some good news this week in that the Central Bank of Ireland is now off the hook on the issue of approving Israeli war bonds. They did not themselves, as far as we know, cut them off. It was the expiry date of the authorisation came through on Monday. And Israel have switched the approval process to Luxembourg. Mm. So we talked about this on the podcast a while back, in which the central bank was approving Israeli war bonds. The government defended the decision and said that their hands were tied. The opposition and in Sinn Féin tabled legislation against this, which the government voted against. But what we did see is a real uprising of people power in the Palestine Solidarity campaigns, who constantly kept this issue on the front foot. Everywhere Pascal Donoghue, the Minister for Finance, went, he was asked about it. And then today, this week, it is no longer that the Central Bank of Ireland is facilitating Israeli wire bonds. It was confirmed by Gabriel McLouf, the governor of the Central Bank, in a letter to Sinn Féin's Mairead Farrell. She is the chair of the Oireachtas Finance Committee. So there you are, Ireland, no longer.
It very much has the feeling of somebody you didn't want to invite to a wedding, had to invite to a wedding, and then they said, well, I'm not coming anyway.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're off the hook. If I was to guess, based on my long and extensive period of time studying and selling war bonds, I would imagine that the publicity around it was bad for business, and mm-hmm. the business being the business of selling war bonds. So if you're Israel, you just want to sell this debt and make, you know, however many billion it's going to be. And there's just too much heat around it. There's protests because these war bonds, were they always called war bonds or were they Israeli government bonds?
They're Israeli government bonds, but they are being used to fund the war effort, so now they're war bonds.
And they have been for sale or licensed. The Central Bank has been handling these since Brexit or close enough till after Brexit.
Yeah.
So they were renewed in September
2024. And we didn't notice.
Mm-hmm. And nobody minded.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't say for definite what exactly happened. All we can do is look at what happened before, what happened now. Something changed, and that has to be, it has to be, couldn't not have something to do with pressure.
Yeah, so I've seen a few headlines today that have been quite misleading, that Ireland has dropped the Israeli war bonds. That's not the case. It has been transferred by Israel. Israel has to transfer it. Now, whether they felt the pressure, they felt that the heat of Ireland, maybe they don't like us anymore. You know, we hear repeatedly Israeli ministers disparaging Ireland and our support for Palestine. And also, maybe they just wanted to do their financial business without all this heat on it. And we have seen, like marriage equality and like the referendums on women's health, governments have to be dragged kicking and screaming to fall in line with the public. And I think even if Israel don't want to admit it, I think this is definitely a win for the people power of Ireland.
Yeah, and maybe it was hitting them. Maybe it was affecting business. Maybe there wasn't as many customers for the bonds as there should have been based on their attractiveness with this dynamic growing economy that they were supporting. Yeah, it works. It doesn't always work in a glorious way, but sometimes works in a slow, dull way, which is always good.
Yeah, and the government, who consistently backed the central bank's position, said it was obliged to approve the documentation issued by Israel if it met a certain criteria, because that was the responsibility they took on after Brexit. But now it's over. I'm sure the opposition will claim a win and the government will say nobody won because it expired anyway. But I think we should probably just note that Irish people have been protesting this and have stood in solidarity with Palestine, and now the central bank is not funding war bonds.
Yeah, fair play to the people who put in the hours for those protests. It takes time.
So this is a breaking and still developing story, but we did want to mention it this morning. We record on Tuesdays, and it may be the case that it might be changed by Wednesday when this podcast comes out or when you're listening to it. But the Gardaí are searching open land in Donabate, an area of North County Dublin. They're investigating into the case of a missing child who they now presume dead. The child from North Dublin was living in Donabate and hasn't been seen in about 3.5 years. So since the child was 3.5, he hasn't been seen. They reckon he is now around 7. A referral was made by TUSLA, which is the Family and Child Agency in the Republic. And the Gardaí are now involved in searching land. This is obviously very distressing, but what makes it more distressing is that it is so reminiscent of the Kieran Dernan case. So Kieran Dernan, again, was a child who was formally reported missing in the last year, but Gardaí reckon Kieran was actually killed up to 2 years before, when he was 6. There have been no sightings of Kieran, and they still not have found any remains. There is very little information about where the child is or was. And now we have another case of another young boy who very much appears to have fallen through the cracks. And it is horrific. So we'll keep up to date with that, but we just wanted to give it a mention. We're back to the Irish presidential race, which, you wouldn't believe it, hasn't actually started yet. We don't even have a date for the ballot officially, but it appears Fianna Fáil have finally chosen their candidate, and it is former Dublin GAA manager and Defence Forces officer Jim Gavin.
Well, the Fianna Fáil cabinet have chosen their candidate.
So actually, per Billy Kelleher, for those not in the know, Billy Kelleher, the MEP and longtime Fianna Fáiler, also wanted to run as the Fianna Fáil presidential candidate, but it very much appears that the powers that be within Fianna Fáil are pushing for Jim Gavin. The Independent reports that the Taoiseach is calling in favours and putting pressure on ministers to back the former GAA manager. And Billy Kelleher said he's been in politics long enough not to take it personally, but there has been some upset within Fianna Fáil that Jim Gavin, who is not even a member of Fianna Fáil, although he has now applied for his membership.
And who ran a team of blue shirts for years and years. obviously Dublin GA team, but just saying.
So yeah, apparently some councillors and members of Fianna Fáil are upset that Billy Kelleher has been treated this way, but it very much appears Jim Gavin is the man. It's not confirmed yet, but it does very much appear that Jim Gavin is going to be the Fianna Fáil candidate. So after our hundreds of suggestions.
Yeah, there's 78 in the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party. So they'll vote secret ballot over the, is it in the next, within the next week or so? The cabinet, by and large, have come out for Jim Gavin.
Billy Kelleher's four backers include Billy Kelleher himself.
Okay, that's fair enough. Well, no, self-care, it's important.
If you're not going to back yourself, who is?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's very un-Irish to have expressed any confidence in yourself. That's the Europe in him now. That's
He's been away in Brussels too long. So the party will meet, the parliamentary party of 71 ministers, TDs, senators and MEPs will meet next Tuesday, September 9th, to select the candidate. The last minister, the holdout to backing Jim Gavin was Big Jim O'Callaghan, the Justice Minister, who is friends with Billy Kelleher and was put in an awkward spot. But he has backed Jim Gavin as well.
I've obviously no dog in the game, but Billy Kelleher came to my father's funeral. So he knows how to...
That's from the Healy race, the Healy race sale of politics there.
That's the grassroots work. So we'll see how the TDs, maybe the TDs will break differently. Secret ballots, famously.
Yeah.
First time I ever heard of a secret ballot was when they were trying to get rid of Charlie Haughey. And it was, I don't know whether it was a successful one or it might have been the penultimate one. It might have been the one which wounded him below the waterline.
The man survived a lot of heat.
He survived a lot. But they had a vote about whether to have a secret ballot in the heave. But that vote was public. So you had to tell Charlie Haughey. So
you were going to vote against him?
I just remember TD saying, no, I want to vote for Charlie Haughey. I just think that the process should be a secret ballot.
I just want my ballot to be secret, but I am going to vote for you.
Yeah, that's such a long... Oh, those are the good old days of heaves. I haven't had a heave in a while,
Alan
actually.
Alan Kelly. I broke that story.
Isn't that right?
Yeah. Alan Kelly was getting heaved, yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like for a heave, you need a critical mass of people to do heaving. He might have been... It was more of a nudge
There's
in
like
the Labour Party.
Yeah.
That's like raising a coffin. Back to Paul Baring. Anyway, obviously heaves are distressing for everyone concerned, but it's been a while since we've had a good old...
Yeah, you'd miss a heave.
There was a heave against Enda Kenny.
Yep.
I don't know whether that worked. I think that didn't work, wasn't it? And the people who played that well subsequently went on to do well in
Fine Gael. Even when you survive the heave, that was like Theresa May. Even when you just survive the heave, sometimes you're too wounded to go on.
Yeah, you're wheezing after the heave, as it were. Yeah.
So Mr. Gavin will join the rest of the candidates so far. Fine Gael's Heather Humphreys is now more or less a stick on to be the candidate because Sean Kelly has dropped out. Independent TD Catherine Connolly, Gavin Sheridan, the businessman, Nick Delahanty, also I think a businessman, and we forget Michael Flatley.
It's very interesting, the timing. Like when I look at people delaying, it's a bit like in Braveheart when William Wallace is saying, hold. Like, it's almost like to do your presidential run, you have to wait till the arrows are within range. It's an interesting timing thing. Or those Olympic cycle races where if they go too early, then they're creating slipstream for the people behind them.
That is such a calm reference. I have no idea what that means. But I would say as well, Jim Gavin has the advantage of massive name recognition in the most populous county and also people who like the GAA. Maybe what they should do is split the RS in half and Jim Gavin can manage one side of it and a woman could manage the other.
Just like Dublin winning too often. Yeah, they don't mention that anymore now. We're splitting Kerry in half next year, please. And two Cork.
I'm sure that won't lead to any civil war. They seem like peaceful people.
Well, it's already split in half because is it Danny Healy-Rae has the north and Michael has the south. So
yeah, the kings of Kerry.
Yep.
we'll move on. This is quite a Dublin-centric story, and we do try and stray away from Dublin-centric because although we both live here, neither of us are from here. But in the last, what would we say, month? In the last month or so, there has been an explosion of tricolours, especially around inner city areas where we both live. I have noticed it around Kilbarrick. I've noticed it in Ballymun. There has been tricolours put up absolutely everywhere, and usually I would have no issue. But this isn't tricolours for the sake of Irish pride. This is tricolours in order to intimidate asylum seekers or people of colour or other people that the far right have deemed not Irish. So Dublin City Council are going to meet the Gardaí in response to the concerns that have been expressed by the public and councillors. Residence groups have said that they want action taken in response to the practice because it's intimidating to people and they're trying to mark territory. So the way RTE have it here is Ballyfermot, Coolock, Finglas and North and South Inner City. I would say it's far more than that. The council said they'll do a risk assessment on how to deal with the situation. So what's happening here is Dublin City Council have been put in this totally impossible position because what the far right want is that Dublin City Council goes around, takes down the tricolours, and then the far right get to say, you're not even allowed to fly the tricolour anymore in Ireland. And we were talking about this earlier, but I never thought I would get to the point where I was nervous seeing a tricolour. When I see a tricolour now, I am not thinking, oh, that's an official building, or isn't that lovely to see? I am constantly worried now that it's there to intimidate people. And the Irish tricolour has now become like the St. George's Cross in certain areas where it's put up to intimidate. And I grew up in a place where people used their flags and actually painted the paving stones to tell people, this is our place, this is not your place. And I think we have imported a rotten type of nationalism from England, who we know the far right is working with English nationalists as well. And we are using our tricolour, which is supposed to be about national pride and the Cead Míle Fáilte, and they're using it to make people scared and nervous, and it's absolutely disgusting.
I really feel for any Dublin City Council worker who would have to, if they came to any decision about tricolours, have to pull it down, because it's a classic, like, well, what? It's just a tricolour. Yeah, but we know why it went up, because, you know, as of now, nobody's competing in the Olympics, or, you know, there's no Irish team doing well, and let's all support it. I mean, it's very hard because it is the symbol of the country. So how do you say for definite which one? And the other thing to say is,
but that's why they do it.
Yeah.
They're doing it because they can say, oh, you're not even, you find the tricolour offensive, but you're not even allowed to be Irish.
Not even a proper Irish person if the tricolour hurts you. And the other thing is, there are no rules, isn't that right? Around, so in some countries, there are rules about the display of the flag.
Do you remember the Belfast City Hall debacle of 2007, 2008?
Is this when the word flags came about?
Yeah,
when
the
spelling of flags became flags. Yeah.
Belfast City Hall flew the Union Jack 365 days a year. And then to keep it in line with the British rules, they said you can't do that anymore. You can only fly it on things like the Queen's birthday or official holidays. And people lost their minds. We had months of protests and riots, and ironically it was to bring Belfast City Hall in line with the rest of Britain, but people were very upset about it. And it was the same thing as that, their identity was being taken away and they weren't even allowed to be British anymore. And I have often used the quote from Martin McGuinness that I'm so confident in my Irishness that I don't have to denigrate someone else's Britishness. And I feel that if you're confident enough in your Irishness, why do you have to rub it in people's faces? Why do you have to have your tricolour everywhere to make sure people know? What you're trying to do is other the people who maybe were not born here or don't look like you. And I actually think it reeks of weakness and insecurity.
And it's so clever because it's impossible to pin.
Yeah, it says here that council officials have been struggling to find a solution to the issue because there are no explicit rules in relation to flying the national flag in the Dublin City area. And it often happens around the Olympics and the World Cup, which, as we know, we do fantastically well. And also contractors are reluctant to remove the national flag.
We've seen that in the north as well around the 12th. From my own point of view, I think, I hate the way it's being used, but I would never put some, you know, contractor out in their, you know, in their ones or twos having to face this, climb up the pole, take one down. It's just putting them in an awful position. I don't know. It's a shitty thing. What we got to do is take it back in some other way. Take the tricolour back as being its original design, as a symbol of unity and tolerance and linking to disparate communities. Got to make the tricolour nice again.
And before this gets twisted in that council officials and the mainstream media and it's all their idea to take down the flags, it's not. There are residents groups from around the inner city who have written to the city council. One letter by the residents said, "We object to the unauthorized erection of these decorations. They dishonor the flag by flouting official protocol and in breach of Dublin City Council's rules of decoration of light poles, and are an attempt by a minority to make a political statement outside of the normal democratic process." And they've asked that they be removed. So this is not councillors for the government or the opposition. This is not the council themselves or the Gardaí. This is not some big Illuminati plan to remove the tricolour. It is from the residents. And I would say also, I live in the inner city and it's a very multicultural and diverse area. And that's why I like living it.
Of course, we are shills for the World Economic Foundation, hoping to do the great reset, isn't it? That's what we're planning to do.
Did you get your Soros check this month?
Soros, yes. But it's in Bitcoin, but it's not a good Bitcoin. It's one of the weird ones. So
like
I can't use it. Can't use it.
All right. Anyway, shout out to Big Daddy George.
Sorsy.
Okay, we move on. This weekend, Garda Síochána counter-terror unit announced that they were investigating extremely grave threats against the children of Taoiseach Simon Harris. Messages were posted on, they said it was a Meta platform, so that's either Instagram or Facebook, because I highly doubt they did it on Threads. But investigators from the Special Detective Unit, who oversee threats to national security and violent political extremism, are pursuing the matter in which they threatened Simon Harris's two very young children. So Simon Harris put out a statement on Monday and he said, "This weekend I received direct threats targeting my family. As a father, I have very strong views and feelings on this. As a political leader, I find it unacceptable. Threatening people, any person, is a crime. Threatening children is despicable. It is cowardice and it is a line that no decent society should tolerate being crossed." He has not commented on it since and said that he wouldn't be commenting. Mm. This isn't the first time that Simon Harris's family have been targeted. There was a bomb threat called India's family home. They have had masked men gathering outside their house in Wicklow, and threats of violence have also been made against his wife, Kiva. There's no other way to say it. This is absolutely disgusting. It is, again, the work of weak and insecure people. I understand there is always anger against the government. You can have thoughts and feelings about how Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have run this country for the last number of years. You can know that your community has been completely neglected. Your child can be on a waiting list. All those things can be true. And yet threatening the children or a politician's life is revolting. I don't understand what goes through people's minds. And I actually don't have any words for this. It makes me want to be sick.
And so it was obviously it's taken seriously enough for the anti-terrorism groups to be involved. Do they assess whether it's a moron or somebody with intent? Is that what goes on? Do you know in general
the threat itself is a crime, whether you're a moron or not? So they said that there were several messages posted on the platform that made specific reference to the children and threatened serious violence against them.
Yeah.
So your intent isn't material. The crime itself is the threat. The SCU, who are investigating, said that they've also been made aware in recent days of the Taoiseach's home address being circulated among far-right actors.
Have you ever had death threats?
Yeah. So I spent a lot of time in Pier Street Garda Station over the years with a number of death threats. And, you know, the thing is, when you get a death threat, and there was one particular person who continually threatened to kill me in like all manner of different ways. And it wasn't DMs, it was public tweets. So in one instance, they said they were going to skin me alive. And then the next one, they said they were going to kill me with a pitchfork. And then they also alluded that they knew where I lived. And I remember I went down to Pier Street Garda station because that was the closest one to the Dáil. And I went down and I talked to the guard, who was great. And it was like around winter time. So by the time I got home, say it was like six and it was dark. And I was living on my own at the time. And my house was dark when I walked under the door. And I remember like the pang of fear being like, what if they're in here? And you know deep down that they're not.
Mm.
But also they did say they knew where you lived and they did threaten to kill you. And even though you think like this is probably a moron, they still get into your head. And I can't imagine how Kiva, the Tánaiste's wife, feels knowing like going out, taking your kids to school every day. They also have close protection for Simon Harris and his family, but taking your children to school every day, looking over your shoulder, being constantly worried. I don't have children, but I imagine you worry about your children every day anyway. And then knowing that there are people that evil and wicked that they would threaten your children. And maybe the point is that they weren't ever going to do anything, but what they want to do is strike fear within Simon Harris and his wife. And that's perhaps the point. And that is, I think, revolting.
Yeah, it makes the leap from online to real life very quickly. For so anybody dismissing online or message death threats as not being significant, they do jump into your brain straight away.
Oh yeah, like the amount of people who used to tell me just don't read it, just don't look at it. And I often used to think, the way I used to describe it was like, my mommy works in a shop, and if there was someone coming into the Marks and Spencers every day and telling my mom to your face that they were going to fucking kill her, I don't think they'd be telling her to ignore it. I feel like Marks and Spencers would do something. I feel like the police would do something. And to be fair, I was very lucky. The Irish Examiner really looked after me. I've always said that. And the Gardaí actually were brilliant. And I also got to the point where I was getting so many death threats. I went into the Pier Street Garda station and it was like something out of Derry Girls, that I said out loud, not being funny, listen, I don't think he's actually going to kill me, but maybe like if he does, it's just better to have it written down.
Keep it. Let's keep a paper trail.
And also, the guard swapped out blue roll for proper tissue paper because I was crying so much.
Okay.
And I found the blue roll very harsh on my skin. And he went and got me like actual toilet roll.
You had platinum level toilet roll membership at Pier Street Garda station.
Shout out to Cahill, my guard. He was amazing. But yeah, this is obviously, you know, common in other countries, you know, death threats against politicians, etc. But to threaten two very small children is the lowest of the low. These people do not represent Ireland. And ironically, they think that they are protecting Ireland by threatening very small children.
Yeah, the protectors of the weak that they are. Yeah.
Also, isn't their whole thing protect our kids?
Yeah, protect our kids.
Our kids, yeah. Pricks. Okay. Calm, this is technical good news and science. As our resident science and sport expert, I'm going to let you do this one.
Well, expert in this, in the podcast sense, which means not an expert at all, but...
a white man talking into a mic.
Absolutely, yeah. I was born to do it. This is my favourite time of year, storm-wise, is where they name the storms. I love when the names come in because it's sort of a reflection of what names are current. But this time, names are being sent in because they mean something to people, which is nice. But anyway, the upshot is, it's great news for a name that I feel has been traduced often and sometimes by my trade, the name Fionnuala. Because Fionnuala too often is used as shorthand for wearing a fleece, going out for their walk, secretary of the tidy towns, getting involved in stuff. But Fionnuala is so many things.
Fionnuala is a national school teacher and the Taoiseach's wife.
Yes. But Fionnuala now is a force of nature. But also, we're reclaiming Fionnuala. Fionnuala was the...
I know loads of cool Fionnuala. Fionnuala Moran, Fionnuala Jay, both very cool.
And Fionnuala Flanagan,
long-standing
actor. Shout outs to the Fionnualas, because Fionnuala was also the oldest sister of the Children of Lear.
Oh, no way.
The one who did all the emotional labour of organising. You know, she had three younger brothers, but she was the one negotiating with God and St. Patrick and all of that, while the other three swans got their legs stuck in the ice.
Because wasn't Aoife the evil witch who made
them swans? She was, yeah, stepmother.
I've always said I have very second wife energy, I think.
Yeah. Please leave my children alone. So it's great. Fionnuala is one of them. And I also love those two storms, one after the other, Dave and Eddie. which is just, it's great. We've you know, some names, Dave and Eddie sound like two lads who come to clear up a place after a storm. You know,
they're in a darts team together.
Two lads in a van. Yeah, so it's always great to see the names. Marty there, of course.
Storm
what
Marty.
What a week for Marty, launching CMAT's album and having a storm named after him. He launched CMAT's album last week, didn't he?
Did, yeah.
We also have Tig. It was going to be really bad for climate change if Tig gets used, because that would mean like 16 or 17 storms.
Oh, sorry, it goes alphabetically.
Goes alphabetically, yeah.
So we might get a Fionnuala.
We might get a Fionnuala. We'll
unlikely to. Is there an Aoife?
No, the A is Amy. So it's Amy. There's Bram, which is sort of Irish because of Bram Stoker.
Bram
Chandra,
Stoker.
Which is the Hindu god of the moon.
Oh,
Dave
class.
And Eddie, who are not the Hindu gods of the moon. We have Fionnuala Gerard, which is technically an Anglo-Norman name, but is in Cork, it's Gerardo. We have Hannah, Isla, Yana, Lilith, which is a cool name. Lilith was, in Jewish folklore, was Adam's first wife.
Hold on. Adam was married before.
But this is in Jewish mythology, not necessarily in the Bible. But anyway, so there is...
none of it's real, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, okay. I'm trying to hold on to some listeners. The atheists don't care, okay? They may or may not listen. They listen to loads of podcasts. Let's keep the religious. So Lilith, yeah, I think it's a cool name. She was Adam's first wife in Jewish mythology. She refused to obey him and went off to become a she-demon.
Class.
So she is a feminist icon.
Also Dr. Fraser Crane's wife.
That's right. Lilith. One of the best opening lines in Cheers, where he says, I'd like you to meet my date, Dr. Lilith Sterner, MD, PhD, AMA, DM, and Woody says, boy, it sure doesn't spell as it sounds. Which I just a great Cheers. Bring back Cheers, by the way, for the Owl Lads. Anyway, so lots of cool storm names. So hopefully we won't need them, or hopefully they'll all be yellow ones that'll just won't cause any problems. And unfortunately for any Quentins, Unas, Xaviers, Yolandas, and Zachs, you'll never have a storm named after you, because Q, U, X, Y, and Z are never used.
Oh.
As storm names. Yeah, so I always like it this time of year. There's never a Colm. There was a Callum, which
Scottish,
is...
Scottish, isn't it?
Yeah, but yeah, like I remember saying there's never a Colm and somebody said, oh, there's a Callum. And I was like, that's like saying I want tea. And they say, we've got Lipton's. No, I want Barry's. You know, it's not the same. So anyway, I like storm naming season. Storm season is tough, but storm naming season is cool for me.
Mm-hmm. And do you have more good news for us?
Well, you know, I always like to bring some good environmental news. In Mexico, they've noticed a huge increase in jaguars, and the proper ones, not the ones that beep unnecessarily at traffic lights or flee the scene of accidents. No, I'm talking about jaguars, the cats who are in Mexico. They're up 30% in their numbers.
Like, so they've been re-introduced to the wild?
Well, they're protecting their habitat, and despite all sorts of pressures, they were nearly going extinct in Mexico up to 15 years ago. They found a few they hadn't known about, and now there are 5,500 there, a 30% increase.
Unreal.
Compared with 2010. So jaguars going at it hammer and tongs in Mexico. And I always say that because people go, oh, animals are disappearing, and there's all sorts of bad news. It's important to highlight the one bit of good news. Well, I don't know, kelp is disappearing or something. But anyway, jaguars are back.
And the pine martens.
Pine martens are doing well. And I saw a hedgehog at Electric Picnic.
No way!
Yeah, on Sunday. And he was doing a walk that everybody walks like a hedgehog on Sunday morning at Electric Picnic. But he was doing this kind of scuttling walk. He had that walk that you do on the way back from the showers.
Yeah.
And he was heading back. He went...
But self-conscious.
Yeah, I have a video, but I didn't post it at the picnic because you'd have all these hedgehog weirdos going looking for him then. Because it was obvious where he was headed
to. You don't want to be papped.
Yes, yeah. And so he was heading under the, you know, that kind of at Electric Picnic, the glade where there's a stage and it's sort of trees. It's within the main thing in Cree. So that's where he was. So yeah, it was lovely to see
a hedgehog
there.
Imagine though, you were a hedgehog that loved there and then Electric Picnic came along, like, what?
I know, swallows were going mad at Electric Picnic.
Yeah,
I really felt that it didn't look like they were pleased. So hopefully all is back to normal. Well, they've loads of tents to sleep in anyway. No, thanks to the young people leaving them behind. And yeah, so hope that hedgehog is doing well. And fun fact for you, hedgehogs, the original name for hedgehog was urchin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hedgehogs used to be called urchins 500 years ago. And I think that might be where the term for a raggedy child came from. And we don't have enough urchins these days.
No, you never really see, like, street urchins.
Yeah, snot noses have declined hugely. And they used to be, you'd always know then, like, who was a raggedy urchin.
We've got two slutty, thank for that. Our more good news this week, we love to hear your good news. So you can send it on to me or Callum on Instagram or a few scoops at goloudnow.com. This one, another international listener, Colin.
Okay.
Hello from Luxembourg. Maybe one of the people.
just landed a sweet deal in war bonds.
Hello from Luxembourg. I finally succeeded in being made redundant from the job I hated and will be spending the next 4 months of gardening leave traveling in Ireland, France and Egypt before starting a new job.
Oh, wow. Maybe they literally just quit from the Luxembourg Central Bank.
Yeah. What a lovely way to tie up this episode. That's us for this week's A Few Scoops. I've been Aoife Murr. You've been Colm O'Regan.
Just about. It's been a weekend, so I'm just about back to myself now.
I'm definitely not. Thank you to our wonderful producer, Siobhan. Please do rate and comment and share the podcast because it means a lot to us. Thank you.